New music from Ramen Fog out of beautiful Vancouver, British Columbia. That track, Head in the Clouds, and then in parentheses, Fromage from Ramen Fog's new record, Ramen Bog, here on Speak Up on CJSF 90.1 FM Burnaby. Before that, we heard a piece from Danny about the BC Nurses Union and the importance of maintaining safe ratios between nurses and patients and what can be done. Thanks to Danny for that one. And next, we're going to head up north once again, and we're going to hear about the Moosehide campaign, which I learned about at the Red Dress Day Memorial event, which happened on May 6th here at, well, on the event I attended happened up here at SFU, sorry, May 5th. And it is a campaign that is led by Indigenous men and boys that highlights and calls attention to the part that men play in perpetuating violence against women and children. And the campaign to raise awareness involves a little piece, a little square of moose hide that you can clip onto your bag or your shirt or whatever. I've got one. And we're going to hear a little bit more about that, thanks to Ian Gregg up at CFUR in Prince George, right now.
This is Ian Gregg reporting for CIFA Radio's Due North on 88.7 FM. This initiative is made possible by the Community Radio Fund of Canada through the Local Journalism Initiatives Program. Find our news stories online at frequencynews.ca. Or CFUR.ca. In 2011, the Moosehide campaign was co-founded by Paul Lessert and his daughter Raven Lessert, with an intention of inviting men everywhere to recognize and understand their role in participating in ending violence against women and children, and even each other. You might notice people year-round wearing small squares of animal hide pinned to their jacket, their shirt, hat, or clothing. From humble grassroots beginnings, by now, this movement, encouraged by Indigenous and non-Indigenous men, has steadily gained participation all over Canada. On Thursday, May 15th, an event was held at the College of New Caledonia outdoors on what was expected to be a chilly, overcast spring day, but turned out to be radiant and well-attended. We caught up with this year's CNC event coordinator, Michael Antoine, Indigenous Holistic Support Worker at the college's ARC, or Aboriginal Resource Center.
Why do you feel it was important to participate in the Moosehide campaign this year? Maybe the gravity is specific around this event compared to years past or maybe years ahead.
I think we had an amazing group of people participating. I had students speak today. I had faculty speak today. I had the president of college speak today. I also had our elder, Darlene McIntosh, speak today. So that gives a broad range of perspectives, right? I don't like to make things all about me. It's about all of us as a community, right? And that those changes need to be made specifically with Indigenous men. That was kind of the focus today, but I'm very inclusive. Women are taking on men's roles today. They're becoming our chiefs, they're becoming our counselors, they're becoming heads of big organizations, they're becoming heads in education. And anytime I participated in any meetings and any role that I've played in the past, more often than not, I'm the only man present. And I started to look when I started to work in the jails and I started to work in the school district and work with foster care children. I started to see a trend that our men, Indigenous men, are out doing things that they shouldn't be doing. They're not present. They're in jails. They're in addiction or alcoholism. And as much as I hate to say it, it's the reality today. So it's up to me and many men like me that have taken a spiritual journey and healthy elders to help break that cycle and to create those warriors again. So if I can get them when they're young and pass on those perspectives and that knowledge and with the elders, the wisdom, we could start to break that cycle and start to protect our women and our children and our elders and our future generations.
CNC student Michael Morgan shared with the crowd and then with us part of his own personal journey in recognizing his own past mistakes and setting a new course towards healing.
I just know that one day I was tired of disrespecting women and children, not knowing how to overcome that. And I had to have a life change. In order to do that, I had to learn how to respect myself and then learn about my behavior, attitude, and my beliefs, and slowly make the change to adapt it to honoring and respecting women and children as myself.
Michael Morgan, along with many other men and women, were both brave and vulnerable to come to the center stage and share incredibly personal stories to help everyone in attendance find their own ways to heal and help address the issue of violence against women and children. We return to Michael Antoine to ask him, as a coordinator of this type of event, how he prepares to properly engage with an event that requires well-tuned sensitivity and an open mind, among many other skills.
The Moose Hide Campaign, it's an event that was created fairly locally here, and now the traction has really picked up. It's across the country. As far as I know, it's actually extended to the United States as well to some degree. But the message in the core of it, it's open to men, women, children, it's multi-generational, it's all ages, but the focus is to invite men in to acknowledge the male role, our role, in perpetrating violence. And intervening in that is at the center, but doing it not necessarily in a shame-based method where people are able to come to these events, participate in the Moose Hide Campaign without the fear of essentially being browbeaten over being a man. And what does it mean to be able to open that door to this kind of event and bring people in with the acknowledgement that we all make mistakes and we come from places that aren't perfect. We wear these imperfections, but can ultimately come to address them. Do you have a stance from which you're able to keep that door open and bring people in and meet people where they're at?
Well, when I started a spiritual journey about 14 years ago, there was a lot of darkness in my life. But as soon as I started that journey, I started to make a lot of changes within myself and recognize the importance and the value of women. As First Nations men, we hold women above us because the reality is they're much more powerful than us. They have that ability to create life. Children are everything to us, our current children and our future generations. It's the reason we work so hard and we do the things that we do so that we can provide a life for the children better than we had. Many, many years ago, you know, when they started the residential schools, violence towards women and children may at a small degree been prevalent with our people, but it's not like it is now. It was taught to us in residential schools that, you know, violence and all of that negativity was normal. It is not normal. I've worked at the elementary level, I've worked at the high school level, now I work at CNC. And as a ceremonial pipe carrier and a sun dancer, I've actually made a lifelong commitment to what you said, keep those doors open and point our men in a positive direction so that we can break that cycle of that violence and that intergenerational trauma. You know, I'd humbly state this, but I've helped a lot of men and women in positions that I've held in the past, and a lot of them have moved on to live really good lives now, clean and sober lives, and that effect is going to pass on to their children and their grandchildren, and so on and so on. I really believe in that ripple effect. So long after I'm gone, I'd like to think that something I may have said or done or pointed somebody in a direction that it affected the future generations. I'm just a regular human being, you know, and I'm able to pass on what I've learned from my elders and my Sundance leaders. I owe it all to them, so I'm just paying it forward.
The event today, those in attendance were students, there was faculty, there was administration, there was elements of the entire college were in attendance today. How do you think that all came to be, that this issue is important to people across all these striations? Those separations weren't so visible today.
Well, the thing is, working out of the Aboriginal Resource Center, we have staff here, and we have our elder, Darlene McIntosh, who's set a foundation and did wonderful work here previous to me even arriving here. I've only been here for about 5 months now, but I think communication is key. I've really pushed myself to get out there, to get to know all of those people that you stated, and make myself relevant around here, because there's a message that I want to spread, and I think it has to be through the whole college community, not just with the students. As much as I love working with the students, the communication is very important with the staff, the faculty, the president of the college, my supervisor. When everybody works together, you obviously seen the outcome, and that was a wonderful day today. It wasn't all just me. Even though I planned for 4 hours, there is a good dozen people that were involved in helping me with all of that, so it wouldn't happen without them.
And one of those collaborative partners was Damon Robinson, membership outreach coordinator for the College of New Caledonia's Student Union.
In this year's Moosehide campaign event, this is a space where people can enter into and work on yourself, work on relationship with others, and practice forgiveness of oneself as well.
I mean, this is a societal question that it's not even just in the Indigenous communities. I mean, we've had some people who went on stage today and talked about where the hurt comes from and how that manifests into the violence that we have with one another. These issues are still existing, you know, and a large part of it. Even at the Students' Union, we have people who are coming from the prison system. We have people who are coming in who haven't been to school since residential school, you know, and we have a lot of these perspectives coming in. And yeah, we might not always agree, but at least if we can come together and say, hey, this is a time for forgiveness, but it requires effort too, no shame attached. If people aren't willing to make the effort, I think that's what we have to do as a society, is to not only just say, hey, this is a problem, but like, hey, how can we make it so it doesn't happen again? How can we make it so you do not feel this pressure that you have to take it on the people around you? You know, and I think a lot of it stems from just how we are as a society, where we are as people. And as long as we uphold our duty to one another to make sure that we are saying to ourselves, hey, what can I do for you? You know, I think that's going to go a long way to stopping this violence in our society, in our villages.
Despite these challenging themes that Damon illustrates, attendance was strong. Though, with any event, there were some challenges putting it on, especially during a time of the year where on a post-secondary campus, a lot of students are no longer present. But somehow, a multi-generational crowd gathered together to fill the outdoor amphitheater at the college. We asked Michael Antoine just what he had to do to put it all together.
Well, it's exactly what you stated. I collaborate a lot with the student union here, and a lot of students aren't present right now. There's not a lot of classes running, but there is a lot of staff. The student union went on a trip last week, so I thought, you know what, I'm just going to hold off until next year so I could put more planning into it. But on Tuesday afternoon, the student union returned, and I thought to myself, you know what, I got a couple of days. I think I can pull this off. Tuesday afternoon is when I spoke to the powers that be, student union, a lot of staff here at CNC, and I actually managed to organize it that afternoon. So in about 4 hours, everything came into play. Prior, I said a little prayer and said, Creator, please let this work out to the best outcome possible. And it's supposed to be cloudy today. We had the sun, some beautiful women showed up, and some wonderful children showed up, and their timing was absolutely perfect. And that's exactly what this day was about, was honoring our women and children. So the fact that that many people showed up on something that was done on such short notice, it's amazing. So I think the Creator had my back on that one. Yeah.
Thanks so much for your time, Michael. I appreciate that.
I appreciate it. Thank you.
This is Ian Gregg reporting for CIFA Radio's Due North on 88.7 FM. This initiative is made possible by the Community Radio Fund of Canada through the Local Journalism Initiatives Program. Find our news stories online at frequencynews.ca or cfur.ca.
You can deny all the things I've seen, all the things I've discovered, but not for much longer. Because too many others know what's happening out there.
slave.
Hi, this is David Duchovny, and you're listening to CJSF 90.1 Burnaby.
This is CICK News. Today on CICK News, I visited Houston for a bit of a tour of Black Knot. No, it's not a heavy metal band, but an Apiosporina morbosa, which is a plant pathogen that's the casual agent of Black Knot, a funky-looking fungus that attaches to members of the Prunus genus of trees, such as Mayday, Plum, and Chokecherry trees that we would see in the Skeena region.
So this here is a Black Knot infected tree here. They're all basically Mayday trees that were planted many years ago. The Mayday tree is a beautiful ornamental tree that has gorgeous white fragrant flowers in the spring. But they have a little chokecherry type fruit on them that the birds like. But unfortunately, this Black Knot, as you can see, those are called cankers. All those big black blistery tarry looking thing, that's this tree is gradually dying. It will eventually die. Wherever the spores land, that's where the Black Knot begins. So it's not something that's in the tree root, or it's not systemic, it's more localized, but it eventually does kill the tree, because as you get more Black Knot on the tree, there's more spores and it'll infect the whole tree.
That voice that you hear is Shirley Hamblin, the operations supervisor for Parks and Public Works in Houston. We're walking in the tall grass behind All West Glass in Houston near an apartment building where she was showing me what the fungus of Black Knot looks like on a Mayday tree. Shirley has been working to eradicate Black Knot fungus on the trees of Houston since 2018. She describes it as a key interest to get ahead of this spore-based fungus, and it's her goal to inform the public early enough in the year to hopefully stop the spread.
So we're working with a lot of private landowners to try and get rid of these trees, and that's why we put in a program this year to offer free pickup if they cut them down.
Okay.
That's what we started on this year, and there was a piece over here, this a whole line of them. We took out about 4 dump truck loads from this site over here, which is, it was a whole head of tall Black Knot trees, and you need to cut it down, either prune the branches off with Black Knot is on those branches, prune it back, or if they're totally infected like that tree, it was pretty well almost dead. You can see by the number of leaves, it's not leafing out very well.
Yeah.
Then you're better off just to cut it right down.
Okay. Why are they more susceptible? Why are Mayday trees more, or Prunus trees?
All the Prunus trees, it's just this Black Knot is it's the type of fungus that likes those types of trees. So it's good because it won't go on your apple trees, it won't go, but there are a bunch of fungus. They're called cankers, that the fungus will develop a canker. So each different tree species has different kinds of cankers that will grow on it. Unfortunately, this one has proliferated for the last 15 years or so. I don't know what it's due to, whether we just, I think it started downtown or on some of these older properties planted, and then somehow one of these trees got infected, and then it's been gradually spreading out from town into the other properties.
Yeah.
And it's...
How young of a tree will Black Knot, will it find its way to any Prunus trees that it likes? Like, how young? Because I'm almost wondering if, like, are you speaking to nurseries then as well to tell them to look out for it? Or
I've asked one of our local suppliers of nursery trees to not bring them in anymore, because it's really, why invest in a tree to plant on people's property that is going to be susceptible to Black Knot? Because we're still, I'd say, at least 5 years away from getting this under control in Houston.
Yeah.
And the spores like to release during warm, wet weather. So May now, once it starts to warm up, it's cold today, but once it gets 60 degrees or better, then there's a warm rain, that's when the spores start to disperse. And they can disperse even if you limb off the branches. And the thing is, a lot of people up here, we can't grow the sweet cherries, but we grow a lot of the sour cherries, and people like those cherry patches too that people like to harvest. And there's some plums, even ornamental plums, that we can grow here. But if we don't get this under control, then none of those things that we would like to grow here could be growing, because it'll just be 4 or 5 years. It's a matter of time.
Now, when people are
disposing them, or when the town's disposing of them, you burning them after, or is it just bagged and then once the limb dies and dries out completely, the spores don't spread?
There's about three different ways you can handle it. So the best is burning them. And so that's what we did with all the stuff we collected up. It actually got burnt this past week. And then you can bag them if they're small. If you prune off the infected pieces, bag them, take them to the landfill, or you can also take them out to the landfill. The bigger branches, they have a burn pile there.
Yeah.
The Knockle landfill, that's just east of here. Okay. Yeah. People can take them there. So that's the best way.
And now, because this is an audio format, can you explain to listeners what black knot looks like and how they can identify it from also a young, maybe like when it's starting to when it's...
Right.
When it's obviously...
You've got the big black tarry knot. Yeah. Big. So, yeah. So when it is... The first thing you'll notice very easily is that big black sort of tarry, bubbly, fungusy looking thing on your branches. So that then is, that's a mature black knot, and that's the one that will start releasing the spores once it's mature. It takes a year, at least a year, after the tree is infected in that spot wherever that spore landed, then it takes a year for that to become infected. And what happens initially I should say, is that you'll find a swelling where you shouldn't have a swelling. So it'll be around a branch. You'll see it's that area where those spores infected, it becomes swollen. It's unnaturally swollen. It's green, it's still green, but that's part of the stem becomes very swollen. So that's a young black knot. So that's what you want to prune out as well. If you can notice it, especially on a young tree, and get the jump on it, then by the next year, give it that season and next season, it'll be turning black. And then it'll start to put out the spores. So it's hard to tell if you have black knot once the trees leaf out. The best time is in the early spring like this before they leaf out.
Yeah.
And that's when you can start noticing those big sort of ugly sores on your branches.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. And I'm not sure if you're, I don't know if you're going to give me an audio demonstration or whatever, but taking it up, it's merely like how far down the limb do you have to take it up? Is it spare the limb, save the tree sort of thing?
So when we do our pruning program here, it all depends on a tree by tree basis, like where the black knot is. So if it's up on a branch and out near the end or say in the middle of a branch, you want to be cutting at least 12 inches around, 8 to 12 inches from that infected area.
Okay.
And then you can spray with whatever you're using, your pruning shears or your pruning saw. You just give it a light spray with a 10% bleach solution, and that'll sanitize it between cuts too. So that really helps. But if the black knot is really prevalent, you basically keep cutting. You just cut the branches off, and we've had to remove a couple of trees this year because all the main stems were totally infected. So it's like, okay, now it's time. This tree has to get cut right down. So then I've had it before. Then depends on whether you want that kind of tree again or you want to take a chance on letting it grow, because it will shrub out again. And I've had some of the parks where I couldn't remove them that I've left them, and they haven't become reinfected with black knot yet.
Good.
Which is really nice, because then you can get a sort of regrow your tree, and it'll come in shrubby, like lots of stems. So you can prune those extra stems out and make it go back to tree form, or you can just have a shrubby bush.
Yeah.
So there's other trees that I've pruned faithfully every year. And this year I took out one young tree right downtown, because it just, no matter what I did, pruning and keeping on top of it, every stem each year was getting worse. But that's probably because it's closer to the epicenter of some of the other properties downtown that haven't had black knot removed. So the biggest thing is, don't plant Mayday trees in this area. Save your money, buy something else. And then the other thing is, realize that this is not a systemic infection. So if you have a young tree or a tree that you can prune every year, just prune out the infected pieces and you can still save your tree. At least, there's still hope down the road if we can get rid of all this extra black knot infected trees from Houston, that you don't have to totally eradicate that type of tree from Houston.
Oh, that's good to know.
So we had some beautiful Mayday trees, huge ones. They were over 30 feet tall on 12th Street down by our search and rescue and on the boulevard there. And they were so infected that we could not prune them and keep heads. We ended up removing them totally. And now, thanks to the BC Hydro Regreening Grant, we are going to replant that area this year with some coniferous species and some other ornamentals. And it'll make a lot of people happy, because folks were quite sad when we removed those big, beautiful trees. But like I said, once they leaf out, you don't see it. You don't see all the black knot and the level of or rate of infection that's happening in those trees. So it's easy to forget.
just how bad those trees are until they're totally dead.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay, thanks.
Thank you to Shirley Hamlin, the Operations Supervisor for Parks and Public Works in Houston, for educating me on Black Knot. I hope that you learned something. CSK News is funded by the Government of Canada, the Community Radio Fund of Canada, and is a participating station in the Local Journalism Initiative. On behalf of my colleague Dan Messick and myself, Pam Hassan, thanks for listening.
Hey, do you want to know about up-and-coming artists, albums, and more? Well, I have the perfect show for you. Come hang out with me at Raccoon City every Tuesday from 12 to 1. Hope to see you there.
Thanks for tuning in to Speak Up. I'm Jesse. Democracy Now! Is up next, right about... Hi.